All right, my friends, welcome back to another episode of the Build Show podcast. That's right, my weekly time to get together with you guys and go deep. You know, on YouTube, we only have so much time, but on the podcast, we get a little bit more time. So today, we're getting into a topic that really is near and dear to my heart, because I really feel like this is a topic that I need some good, solid builder advice on. And our guest today is one of our newest contributors to the Build Show Network, CJ, the owner of CNC Electric out in California. He's in kind of the North Bay area, Sonoma County. So we're going to be talking on this podcast specifically about really what I would call, or from a broad topic range, 2023 electrical, what you need to know. We're going to touch a little bit on smart panels. We're going to touch a little bit on solar. I really want to pick CJ's brain about pre-wires and what I need to be thinking about on my houses when it comes to thinking about electrification, electrical cars. You know, what if I'm going to do X, Y, and Z in the future? So with that being said, let's get going. All right, guys, before we jump into the podcast, I want to say a big thanks to our sponsor, Aquar. If you're not familiar with these guys, they've got a brand new product they unveiled at the IBS 2023 show. But we're talking electrical on this podcast, but Aquar is what I would consider the hose bib of the future. A really, really beautiful stainless steel fixture that doesn't look like a hose bib, that all their models are frost-free, meaning they're not going to freeze over on you. And brand new this year from these guys, they have a hot cold unit, which honestly, I haven't even seen yet. I'm going to IBS next week. And as you're listening to this, it's already been over. So you should be able to drop that right in the Googles and look up Aquar, A-Q-U-O-R, and check out their brand new fixture that's out. CJ, really, really excited to have you join, brother. How are you doing today?
Nice. I'm doing great, Matt. I'm excited too. It's nice to see you again.
Man, CJ, you've been an awesome addition to the Build Show Network. Your videos have been on point. They keep getting better and better. And this topic that we're talking about today is particularly relevant because I saw on your Instagram feed, by the way, it's CNC Electric, correct, on Instagram?
CNC underscore electric.
Okay, CNC underscore electric. Yeah. I saw that you were installing a span panel in a project or maybe a remodel project. Let's spend a few minutes talking about smart panels and maybe even span specifically. So can you tell me about that particular project that you're working on?
Yeah, so I think when you say smart panel, it's come a long ways. I mean, the technology in general is moving at light speeds. You turn the corner and it's changed. So some of the early smart panels, I think, were introduced, I think even in like the 2018, 2019 IBS, Leviton has one.
Yeah.
And the concept behind them is getting rid of the, what we'd call a dumb panel, right? Just like an old phone versus a smartphone, the ability to, you know, control loads independently, monitor usage was some of the early stuff. But now Span released a panel. And when I was introduced to it, we installed, I think, I want to say it was one of the first 50 in California or total installs of a span. That was last year.
Cool.
So we didn't really pump it early. You know, we're early adopters, but we want to also have something proven before we just start, you know. And it's been nothing but amazing. So the concept behind it is short but sweet, is interfacing with batteries and giving control to users over the individual breakers in their circuit panel, which a normal, you know, breaker panel, that technology hasn't changed, you know, since we went from fuses in the 40s or 50s into circuit breakers, not much has changed.
Right.
You know, they trip because of dead short. The big technology leap was arc fault and GFI breakers. But other than that, it's been real stale. So when Span came out on the market, from what I understand, is I think it had something to do with a Tesla engineer starting his own company. And so that's where you see that real sleek, beautiful,
their panel box is pretty. It's real pretty.
The thing that I was real skeptical when I hear new panel, there's really only three or four brands in the game that have been around forever. You know, GE, Siemens, Eaton.
Who makes Square D? Is that a Schneider product?
Schneider. And now, you know, and it's so many some of them own each other and sure. whatnot, but it hasn't yeah. changed. There isn't really a difference in other than quality, but the technology and the big players have always been there. So when Span introduced, I was thinking this is going to be interesting because, you know, a circuit breaker is the main piece to our panel. The panel's mm-hmm. easy to get, but I just being able to go to a box store or a supply house and pick up a specific breaker was always my concern. And the cool thing about Span is it has a microgrid in between the breakers, and you're actually using other people's breakers. So you, a Span panel fits a Square D breaker.
Is that right?
A Cutler hammer breaker. Yeah, they're universal. That's what I think kind of put them on the map.
And that's
they're
actually so they've because, got you this know, they cool.
can introduce this stuff.
So they've got this then, cool box yeah. with electronics in it, but it's using kind of off the shelf parts to make it to make the final connections. Am I understanding yeah, that
the,
right?
The breakers, exactly. Right, the breakers. The, you know, the most important piece to the puzzle is the breaker.
Got it.
And that was my concern with some of the other smart panels out there. They're proprietary breakers, uh-huh. and getting your hands on them might be a little harder than.
Yeah. What happens if they go out of business in 5 years? I'm stuck with a brick here that I can't.
Always
fix.
Always a concern with new technology. But long story short, the interface with batteries is what they are around for. They can prioritize your loads. Turn things off when you have a power outage or when you're using battery power so that you're not draining your batteries using non-priority loads, useless things that might not be important during an outage.
That makes a lot of sense. So, okay, you've got a project, probably you put it in that has solar and has batteries. Is it a Tesla Powerwall or something like that that's in the garage?
The project that we just highlighted has 3 Tesla. So that's its primary backup when it's grid tied. So it is tied to our utility.
Okay.
everything else is real traditional. Other than when there's an outage, the batteries will pick up and power the house. And the Span panel will be able to interface with those batteries to, like I said, prioritize loads from, you know, high, medium to low priority.
Got it. And so pardon my ignorance, but like over the years when I've installed a backup generator, there's always this switch, this automatic transfer switch that goes, okay, the meter's not functioning. I'm going to automatically switch on to the generator. The generator is going to fire up, and then it's going to switch the load after generator's been running for a couple seconds and is powered up. Does the span panel automatically do that for this customer? And then instead of a generator, it's pulling from batteries instead of the meter? Is that how it works?
So the way the Span panel is and other smart panels is they're just a circuit, a load center with okay. breakers. The battery system, you don't need to use a battery system with Span. There's other advantages to using it, not just Span, but other smart panels
okay.
without batteries.
Got it.
And so the battery systems or the generator, whatever the emergency backup power source is, the transfer switch is integrated with that system.
Got it.
So whenever I explain to, you know, someone that doesn't install these things, whether it's a generator or a battery, there's 3 inputs in the transfer switch. There's your normal utility power, mm-hmm. and it'll just go straight through to the second connection is the load,
okay.
your sub.
Yep.
And then the 3rd input is your emergency backup source, so whether it be a generator or a battery.
Got
and
it.
So all that switch is doing is detecting grid or utility power being out and flipping the switch so that your sub panel or your important loads is now connected to the emergency backup source, whether it be a generator or batteries.
Got it. And then in your mind, what's the big draw for the Span in particular? Like what's the big killer feature or this is why it's totally, you know, worth it for some clients to spend the money on it?
So being in an outage, you know, if we lose power, a lot of our customers are in the hills. That might not even be the main factor. You could lose power in the city during a storm, depending on where you're at.
Yeah.
Power is critical. And so when you have the batteries, they're great. Generators are still, you know, our main source of backup power
mm-hmm.
because of capacity. You could sure. just keep dumping gasoline in it or fill it up with propane or
yep.
feed it with natural gas. So the power's, you know, fuel is more readily available, but the batteries are great, con being capacity.
Yeah.
And so the Span panel allows you to regulate. So as you're gone or if you're during an outage, you don't have to run around and start shutting things down.
Right.
Span will see that. Your app interfaces directly with the panel. So when you get an outage, you've already told your interface through your phone what to prioritize. You know, for us, it would be refrigerators, lighting.
Right.
And then you don't want to drain your batteries, you know, using things that you don't necessarily need, maybe pool pumps or hot tubs, you know, luxury things that aren't necessary to extend the battery life or the battery capacity to get you through an outage.
That's pretty cool.
So that's the biggest thing. You know, you lose power with battery, your irrigation pumps are still running. Your, you know, unnecessary things will still draw and drain that battery.
Yep.
And SPAN allows them to, you know, interface without having to think about it, without having to run around, whether you're home or not. It's still it's a huge convenience.
Yeah. I've not installed a SPAN before, but in my limited research 6 months ago or a year ago when I first learned about them, it seemed like it was also giving the end user really good per circuit data so that you could go, okay, you know, it looks to me like if I get rid of these couple phantom loads or whatever, I could run my house on a 6 kW solar, you know, array based on the on this really good granular data I'm getting from my SPAN panel. Whereas some of the other load monitors out there are much more macro, and the SPAN panel would give you pretty micro, you know, pretty small granular data. Would you agree with that? Is that true?
Yeah. And the fact that it's software driven is, it only improves. They interface real good with the Tesla Powerwalls. You know, battery storage aside, having that data, I think, is important for, for anybody, whether it's for the monetary, you know, energy usage, you know, to try to keep your power bill down. I would be willing to bet a large percentage of people have no clue, other than when their utility bill comes, you know, what's using what, you know. And I think it would make us all a little bit more conscious, just from the energy usage standpoint, to kind of know what you're doing, you know, that affects, you know, like I said, even if it's just to save money, the it's a huge, you know, you have metrics, like you said, on the data use, on the usage of what you're powering.
Yeah, that's pretty sweet. What about the Leviton panel? You know, when those, I've yet to install one, and yet I think they're super cool, and they seem to have some, maybe not quite as much functionality as SPAN has, but some of that functionality, like, hey, I'm away from the house, I'm going to get an alert from my phone that I had a breaker trip, or I could monitor each individual circuit. Have you put any of those Leviton panels in at all?
We haven't installed personally, but I have highly respected electrical contractors that I network with and talk with, friends. And they praise them.
Really? Okay, good.
Amazingly. Yeah, there's a huge advantages to the way they really reinvented the way the breaker goes into that Leviton panel.
Is that right?
The grid behind it actually receives the wiring, so you cannot install the real expensive breakers on a project until the bitter end.
That's awesome.
But you can still get all the hard work done and then just click them in.
That's nice.
The monitoring is a big advantage. You can also remotely control your loads. So, I mean, these companies aren't messing around when it comes to, you know, reinventing this technology, and Leviton's one of those big players in there.
Are there any others besides SPAN or Leviton that you know of, or you're hearing is a kind of up and comer in the smart panel world?
Yeah. I mean, I've seen Kohler has stuff. Generac has batteries, you know, so when we're talking about batteries, there's a little bit more stuff on the market. But as far as a smart panel, Schneider's working on one. If it's not even already out, and that's the thing too, is it's,
Schneider has one. In fact, we got a video coming up with them on it, and they sent us one, so I'm excited to dig into it. I need to know a little bit more about it, but they've got a California only one.
So that's what will really dictate some of these panels, is where you're at, and you know, those national, you know, those codes. But Schneider's been around forever, and they're super respected. So
yeah, it's a big company.
It's really exciting, I think, for a nerdy electrician like myself. But even from a homeowner standpoint, with technology, you know, the options that we have and that are coming out are pretty impressive.
Can any of them let you reset a breaker remotely, to your knowledge?
Reset is the issue, right? So it's the way the breaker trips.
Right.
SPAN does not allow you reset. Leviton doesn't allow you. You can shunt trip, remotely.
Oh, you could trip it remotely, but you couldn't reset it.
Remotely, okay. Yes.
Gotcha. So you could shut something down remotely.
The reset isn't something it's a harder process when it really comes down to the engineering part of it. But
yeah,
makes sense. It's probably not too far away.
Let me ask you.
With the span, you can turn off and then on loads.
Oh.
So that's the advantage. You're not. If it was to trip,
it's different.
Through a dead short or something, you're kind of out of luck. But you can also definitely through.
But you could turn on and off loads. Yeah, that makes sense. Talk to me about whether any of these smart panels and or this whole battery and solar conversation has changed for you, your conversations with builders and clients about preparing for the future. Because I think it's probably a whole nother podcast that we don't have the 3 hours for today. But I do want to delve into a little bit. Like what should we or could we be doing to prepare, whether we have a smart panel or not, for a more electrical future, whether it's future electric cars in the garage, whether it's, hey, I think I'm going to add an inverter and goes, add some solar panels for tying back to the grid, or I might put a Tesla Powerwall in the next 5 years. What should I do, CJ? What kind of conversations and what are you recommending out there?
So I think that's the might is something that needs to be asked when you're designing the house. It's a no-brainer. It's just like any other technology we've seen. It's coming so quick that it's so new that people still have that. It's not here yet. It's not here yet. And 2 years from now, it is here.
It will be. So
The batteries have come. It's going to change the way that you install, and there's no reason not to plan for it. Whether you're doing it now or you're going to do it a year or two from now, it's we're going to see them everywhere. Yeah. And so what the strategic, the long of the short or the short of the long of it is, when you circuit a house, when you're actually designing what loads are going where, what breakers are in where, it's all based off priority. Mm-hmm. There are certain things that batteries don't like and probably won't like for a long time. Locked rotor, motors, pumps, HVAC. Those are things that are going to draw. So when you can isolate those in a separate panel and install the critical stuffs in what we would call a critical load panel, that's going to set you up for the future to where if you wanted to install a span, it's just a matter of removing and replacing a panel. Or maybe we're installing a span in a house, which we have done, that doesn't necessarily have batteries, but the anticipation is that we are going to have batteries. Mm-hmm. So I think, without getting into, the engineering portion of designing a job, it's talking to your electrical contractor and saying, hey, what if when I want to install these batteries, where's the transfer switch going to go? And the transfer switch is intercepting something. So what you need to do is prep to where when you want to intercept that wire, it's easy, whether it's on the interior of a garage wall or, somewhere where it's accessible. There's too many homes that get roughed in with wiring in their meter panels in one of the hardest corners where it backs up against, your finished kitchen.
Yes.
Where those challenges. So I think talking to the installer, because it's not something that's in our blueprint, in our plan set from an electrical contractor's point of view, we get to kind of make those decisions on most of the jobs.
Yeah, that makes
sense. And it's really easy to, not plan for any of that, based off of the fact that, no one asked about it. So I think asking your installer, hey, what if and where am I going to put these batteries, taking to today's codes, and then also, like I said, prioritizing where those breakers are and which ones are going to be priority later.
Yeah, that makes sense. What about the solar
could be the same thing.
Solar be the same thing. What about the, the 5 years from now I'm going to have an electric car possibly – question that I don't know yet, but I'm thinking 5 years from now, what do you recommend for people that are in that situation?
Oh, EV, just the car in general?
Yeah, just a general.
I mean, in California, we're going to be doing it whether you like it or not.
Is that right? Is it code?
Rules here. But that's another thing that's come a long way. What was our option 2 years ago as far as the EV market went? Tesla and, a couple here and there. And And I think they, you know, if you look at the projected cars that are going to be on the market even this year, it's, I think everyone's got one. You know, every manufacturer has one out. So they're here and they're not going anywhere. There's pros and cons, but prepping for one, same concept, you know, in California, we're actually required to, on a new resident, on a new home when we're wiring it, to provide a circuit for a car charger.
See, I didn't realize that. That's fascinating.
So it could be as easy as that, providing an empty conduit from your main panel and supplying a box to where when you do get your car, it's going to be an easy install. It's cheap insurance to just...
it can't be easy to pull that big fat wire through a conduit, though, is it?
You know, properly sized. But you, what I'd recommend is all these manufacturers are going to start making it really easy for us to charge. All these chargers are basically universal. The big thing is, just like any other, is size, how fast it can charge. So I think all those things factor in right now. But by definition, or, you know, when I'm recommending it to a customer, we're installing a 50-amp circuit.
220.
Whether you have a car or not, 50 amps, 240 volts, which is equivalent to, you know, a large hot tub or or a dual fuel range, you know, real common. And in the garage, and then most of these cars are coming with a unit that you can plug right into, a NEMA 1450 rated, you know, for EV charging.
Oh, is that right? Okay.
And then you're good to go, you know, but they do have rapid chargers. They have chargers from Tesla we could feed up to 100 amps, which is more than some houses have. But, you know, you're getting that
super mileage, fast charge
battery. You're getting that charge much quicker.
Could you run two 50-amp circuits into the garage for a charger in the future, so you'd have 100 amps potentially?
Yeah. So what we do his most of the houses that we're doing right now, that's an easy, you know, thing that we point out is like, hey, what happens when him and her, you know, a husband and wife or a couple has, you know, two cars in a two-car garage? We want one on each side. So it's super common, at least in our area. It's almost a no-brainer, like I said. It's cheap insurance.
Yeah. And do you have
one now in a couple of years, if you're rewiring a house or installing new, it's pretty much a no-brainer.
Put it in. Yeah. This is kind of a random question, but help me understand why you might run that in aluminum versus copper. That big, you know, I'm always thinking those big wires that are the 50-amp wires. Isn't it common to see them run in aluminum because it's a whole lot less expensive? But should we be spending the extra money to run those in copper, I guess, is my question.
You're going to start a firestorm with the electrical world, you know, because it's a highly debated topic.
Is it?
And my theory on it is, you know, our general rule of thumb, depending on, unless an engineer specifically asks for copper, anything 100 amps and up, we are usually running in aluminum. That being said, it's basically because you're landing those wires into a lug versus, you know, a connection. Aluminum really got its bad name when they were using it with small wiring going to switches and receptacles.
Yeah.
And aluminum has the characteristic of it actually expands and contracts a little bit more than copper. And so that was where aluminum got a really bad name before they figured out it was burning down houses because they used to wire whole homes in aluminum Romex, basically. And the most important thing to do is, just like anything, is if you're installing it in according to the rules, you're good to go with either material you want. The big mistake is installers or homeowners or people who aren't, you know, trained are installing aluminum using copper only connections. Wire nuts, some wire nuts are only rated for copper. That being said, when you're landing larger wire, you're landing it in a lug, and the terminations are stamped copper and aluminum, if you know, as long as they're rated. And there's nothing wrong with it. Our utility companies, you know, we do jobs where they spec out copper for everything, feeders from 200 amps all the way down to the, you know, like I said, 100 amps and ups is a kind of a good rule of thumb. You know, it's cost saver is what it really boils down to, because copper's gotten really expensive.
Boy, has it ever. Like all those big materials that were in there.
So
were
if it's installed properly, you know, go with what you want.
Yeah.
I'm not a snob when it comes to that, but I know it's a highly debated topic that I could go on forever about, but you got to use the right stuff at the right time, you know, the right connectors, the right panels. They have to be rated for for aluminum connections.
Yeah, that makes sense. We touched on it super briefly, but tell me a little bit more about what you'd recommend for someone who's thinking they might have solar in the next, 10 years, let's say. Is there a pre-wire? Is there a conduit? Is there a, something that you're doing on most of your jobs or having a conversation on that's a kind of solar pre-wire conversation?
Yeah, so bare minimum, like you said, a conduit. So if it's going to be a roof mount system, mm-hmm. then you want to get a conduit back to your main panel where your solar is going to tie in and backfeed to.
Yep.
Appropriately sized per the maximum. You only have so much roof space. That's another one. You run past a solar or an electrical contractor and say, hey, how big of a conduit do I got to get up? Because it's going to be easier to run it through the walls to the second or third story of a house to get it on a roof.
Yep.
Cheap insurance. The other thing is that, when you pick a rail, the rail system that mounts the solar panels and the standoffs through your flashing on your mm-hmm. roof, mm-hmm. It's cheap to do when you're installing the roof in a generic grid.
Yep.
Knowing what size panel they're very flexible, but it's, again, cheap insurance. Panels have come a long way. Solar's, tomorrow we'll get new news that there's a new module out. The modules out right now are just amazing. So yeah. I think it's the if it's budget's a concern early on, it's a conduit to the roof, a location for maybe inverters. If it is a string inverter, we have now micro inverters that sit behind the panels, but also just the flashing on a roof. So same thing with a homeowner that has a house that, isn't being built right now. It's already built, but they're re-roofing. Mm-hmm. Perfect time. Meet with a solar installer. Pay for the standoffs so it's properly flashed waterproofed. You don't have to install the panels.
Yep.
You don't have to install any of the components then, but you're ready to go when it's everyone has one. I think it's just like any other technology.
Or go standing seam like I do.
We didn't all have, they didn't all have one. I shouldn't say we. I've always had one,
Or go standing seam like I try to do on as many projects as possible, because then it's just a clamp that doesn't penetrate anything.
Oh, cute. Exactly.
I'm but hoping to do solar on the next.
So the penetration on a standing seam, I know for, even in my experience, that it's easier to, you still got to get through the roof and back to the main panel. So the penetration where those are going to take place, you can prep for those, regardless if you're ever going to do it. You have that peace of mind that when the time comes, you don't have to run this, ugly conduit. Aesthetics is a big thing too for us, strategically laying out those penetrations so that they're behind the solar panels instead of like in a retrofit application, you got to run a conduit down a roof and you got your beautiful standing seam with these conduits running everywhere.
Gross.
Down a beautiful stucco wall into.
Yeah.
So it's, I think it's cheap enough to install it, prep it
for sure. Tell me what else is in your crystal ball for 2023 or maybe even beyond. You and I are headed to the International Builder Show next week, and I think by the time this podcast is out, we'll have already come back. So look for our videos either on buildshownetwork.com where CJ's shooting videos, and I'm also hoping to get him on one or two of my IBS wrap-up videos. So we don't quite know what we're going to see at IBS in the coming week, but what else are you seeing and hearing about that you think might change the conversation or change the way we're doing things when it comes to electrical?
Well, just what we touched on real quick was the actual smart panels. Mm-hmm. I think it's just like the cars. I think we're going to see every manufacturer almost be forced into creating one, and it only provides a more, competitive market to where the advancements happen really quick. So I'm excited about that because it's like LED technology. It's happening so quick. We can wake up tomorrow and it's changed.
Yeah.
Battery technology, the EV market's really driven the technology of the battery systems. It's always been the Achilles heel of every budget is the at the cost of the batteries. Yeah. And so I just think that's just going to come plummeting as they figure out new technology. You know, it's not just lithium ion anymore. It's mm-hmm. lithium ion phosphate, and there's safety stuff. So I'm really excited about stuff like that. Solar, again, same thing. You know, you're talking modules are starting to be integrated into roofing shingles, yeah. you know. Tesla's had that out for a minute, but there's other manufacturers who are coming up with similar ideas where
we might see some of those at IBS next week. 2 or 3 years ago, GAF had a roof integrated shingle that was meant to integrate even with just a regular asphalt shingle looking roof. Of course, a more architectural higher end one, but it wasn't even the real modern looking Tesla solar roof. So I think we're definitely going to see more of that in the not too distant future.
I think providing value is what I'm kind of excited about, is because we're lucky in the area we work on and the type of projects, you know, every project still has a budget, but it's really hard to justify some of these things when it's not proven or it's just not there yet, or return on investment. I feel like that's a big ROI is a big solar word. And I think it's come now where we're getting to a point where we don't have to talk about ROI when it comes to return on investment on owning your own energy. Seems like a no-brainer. It doesn't have to add up to dollars and cents at the end of a project, because we don't do that with other finishes on a job. You know, you're a mahogany front door.
What's no one ever talks about
return on investment on that.
That's right.
And so I think now that batteries have come to where they're in the proven technology, where I think it's going to be, you're just going to see them more because of the fact that, who doesn't want a home that operates? Generators have always been an issue. Noise.
Yeah, even more so for you in California. I mean, you guys have been dealing with wildfires and power issues for more than a decade. Whereas I think for us as Texans, it was Hurricane Harvey that really kicked off the holy cow. You know, I could be out for a week. And then after Hurricane Harvey, we had that big snowpocalypse. What was it, 2 years ago now or 3 years ago? Where I had some of my customers that were out for 7 days without power. And now that conversation's in every job, is what do we do for that? But I think that will continue to drive that conversation about, you know, battery backup, solar. This is beyond just ROI. This is simply, hey, how could I in effect unplug from the grid if I had to?
Yeah. And the safety of the batteries has come a long way. Mm-hmm. We've heard about Teslas exploding, and, you know, everyone has a pro and a con, or where are we going to get them and where are we going to dispose of them? So I think all that stuff will kind of work itself out, I'm hoping, just like everything in the economy. But I think, you know, the ability to stash away a battery in a garage or an enclosure where they're out of sight, and there's no fumes. You don't have to worry about filling them back up with fuel if you have a solar array. They're starting to figure out how to charge the batteries, and there's different ways of going about it. But actually, as you use them, harvesting power, energy is only going to keep going up. And so when we're making it and we're harvesting it and we're using it, in at least in California, off-peak hours with our utility company, we get charged more during certain times of the day. So if you can charge your batteries, and whether you have an outage or not, and then use your stored energy to offset, you know, the cost because you're using it during – you're using your free power, virtually free power during the real high demand times. So the grid too, our grids, you know, we could go into that, but it's been taxed forever. It's old infrastructure.
For sure.
So I just think the ability to own your own power is something we're going to see. Just eventually we're probably not going to be plugged into the grid. Maybe not. It depends on how it all works.
There's Are you getting that conversation already right now with some of your clients and builders? You know, what if we just unplug?
Yeah, so there are off-grid houses. They pop up here. It's more of, like a passion project right now. Mm-hmm. Sometimes it's out of necessity. We have some projects in the hills where neighbors, we haven't actually done an off-grid, but we have, you know, through those big fires in 2018 and 2019, some really big homes got lost. And These are pretty wealthy people. And now when they're rebuilding, it's actually here where they can do it. It costs an arm and a leg. You know, it's a little bit more than it being economically, you know, a wise choice. But it's here, you know, and so you're not tied to utility power.
And the more of those people that do it, that means that you and I and the rest of the consumers though will benefit from airbags being in only Cadillacs or Lexuses for the first few years, right? And then that will trickle down to the normal middle class. And I suspect you're in a market where that could even get legislated in some way, shape, or form. Like, look, if you're building in these areas, if you're building to this dollar figure or this whatever, you have to not only be net zero capable, but you have to, you know, be off grid, or, you know, it won't be long till there's no gas lines available for those houses, which means, okay, crap, I've lost my ability to plug into a natural gas generator. Now I got to get a propane generator.
Yeah. So I think another, you know, piece of the puzzle, sustainability. We talk about that all the time with just natural resources. We're going to run out of them eventually, or are we not? It's the same thing with, it might not just be a standpoint where you're independent now, but microgrid is a word that people are throwing around, you know, where commercial buildings might have bigger arrays that are able to backfeed into the grid that, you know, the whole community can use. So there's a lot of exciting stuff that just hasn't been, it's been more or less a pipe dream until now we're starting to really see it kind of come to light. All these years of technology being improved, I think it's exciting.
Yeah, it is pretty exciting. Man, we should probably wrap it up, CJ. We're coming up to 30 minutes or so of podcasting. I always like to keep the podcast able to be listened to in one job site visit.
I love it too.
Most of my jobs are like a 30-minute drive, so I'm usually like, all right, let's cut it off here so we don't go too long. But guys, if you're not familiar with CJ, he has been with BuildShow Network now since this past summer, right, CJ? We brought you on in August?
November, December, yeah. I
think is that right? November? I'm excited. Losing track of time.
You know, we've been talking about so many ideas. There's so much stuff for us to show off and talk about when it comes to the world of electrical, and I'm really excited about it. So man, I couldn't be happier to be a part of it.
You've been awesome, man. And if you guys want to go to our website, buildshownetwork.com, you can see all of CJ's past episodes, including probably one of your most watched videos, CJ, is the who is this CJ Nelson video. Everybody wants to kind of know who they're watching and what you're all about, even if a specific video doesn't interest them. And so I'd highly recommend you go hear more about CJ. We also have a podcast from last year when we introduced him from season two. But CJ's publishing pretty much every single week on buildshownetwork.com. And if you're not familiar with our newsletter, somewhere in the description below or wherever you're listening or watching this, there's going to be a sign up for our newsletter link. And twice a week, my team on Tuesdays and Fridays is going to send you an email that says, here's what's new on the site, including here's CJ's new video or Lydia's or Jake's or Steve or Will or any of our crew. So I'd highly recommend you get out there and sign up for that newsletter so you know what CJ's got going on. And like I said, stay tuned for CJ and I from IBS 2023 next week. It's going to be a lot of fun, brother. I'm excited.
Las Vegas, it'll be cool. That place is just packed full. And same thing, you know, when you're on buildshow.com, and you're, you know, flipping through videos, if the, you know, electrical is not for you, there's just, I mean, it's a wormhole. I get lost on it all the time, so it's always fun. You guys
it's really fun.
I love it.
And we got some really smart builders, remodelers, carpenters, electricians, plumbers, drywall contractors, and our lone architect, Stephen Basic, out there preaching the gospel of better built houses. The cool thing about it that I really enjoy is that it's all free. We're advertiser supported. I thanked Aquar at the beginning of the podcast today for supporting us. We're coming to you from the Rockwell Studios, another one of our longtime supporters. These are companies that we've used for a long time. We know their people. We know all their, most of the time, we know the owner of the company. A lot of these are small, family owned businesses, just like CJ and I's company. So we appreciate those guys for supporting us so that this podcast, all our videos, everything's free to you. All you've got is a 30-second ad at the start of CJ's or my videos on buildshownetwork.com. And by the way, we don't break into videos like YouTube does to throw an ad at minute two that you can't fast forward or do anything with. We only do a beginning and an end ad. So I'm proud of what we've accomplished, and I'm excited to spend some time with you next week, CJ, at IBS. Guys, go follow him on Instagram as well, CNC_electric. Electric, right?
Electric, yeah.
Electric. Yep. And if you're not a subscriber to the podcast already, go hit that subscribe button. Or, by the way, you can watch the visual version of this if you want to see CJ and our matching Build Show hats, sweatshirts, and T-shirts. We're looking good today, and you can come watch us on buildshownetwork.com. That being said, guys, follow us on Twitter, or that's the wrong outro. I kept saying Twitter. We're not even really using Twitter anymore, although I think maybe we'll see. Maybe Elon will make a comeback on Twitter. Follow us on TikTok or Instagram. Otherwise, we'll see you next time on the Build Show podcast.